when my daughter was 3 years old, she came downstairs, and I told her her shirt was on backwards. So she turned around.
Fixed it right up. There, Dad. See? I'm brilliant.
Yes,
I didn't have to take the shirt off.
She didn't say anything. She just thought she'd fixed the problem.
Okay, this is Paul Wheaton. I'm here with Steve Hackeroth. And I have posted several things at permuse.com about Steve Hackeroth. Not only has he done a bunch of stuff where using that solar roofing stuff, which is basically like it is the roofing, and you hook it up to wires, and it powers your house. Not only has he done that, but and not only was he mentioned in a previous podcast where we were talking about natural swimming pools, but I've posted a big, huge thread that's been read thousands and thousands of times about electric tractors. And basically, for all the things that Steve is doing, I think that the electric tractor thing is the biggest world-changing thing that just seems to have not picked up steam. I mean, I am stumped. If somebody can tell me why the electric tractor is not currently the dominant on-farm vehicle, I would really like to know more about it. So anyway, I have Steve Hackeroth here. He told the joke. Steve, thanks for being part of the podcast, man.
Sure. Glad to be here, Paul.
Say hi to the pod people.
Hi, pod people.
So, when I had my farm years ago, I had a diesel-powered tractor, and it was a 45-horsepower tractor because most of the farm was doing hay production, and we were moving it towards permaculture. But the vehicle that I preferred for everything on the farm, for all my day-to-day work, which I used probably 20 times more often than the tractor, was this electric golf cart. It was sold to me as a monster golf cart, and I believe they added the word monster to it just because it had knobby tires and a lift kit. But I use that for all kinds of stuff. Unfortunately, this golf cart could go like 15 miles an hour, which seemed to be the speed that everybody wanted to drive it at, thus jiggling all the tools out of it, and then I would find tools all over the farm later, especially wherever the golf cart could go. But I fantasized about the idea of the golf cart having like a transmission that was geared lower, so that way it would have more power, go slower, and all-wheel drive. Because there were times when it's like it needed four-wheel drive instead of the two-wheel drive that it had. Like the two-wheel drive wasn't cutting it, but it was smaller. So and then the tractor I had just seemed oftentimes to be just too big. And it was after that, after I had these two pieces of equipment, that I found your website and got, you know, totally absorbed in the idea of the electric tractor. And your website made it seem obvious that everybody should have an electric tractor. I know that my diesel tractor, John Deere 5000 series, I don't remember, 5105 I think it was, it had these enormous back tires, and it was a four-wheel drive tractor. It had these enormous back tires, which they filled with what they call it calcium, but actually it's a liquid something with calcium in it. You know what it is?
A lot of them just put water in the tires.
Okay. So, but then that was there to add weight to the tractor.
Exactly.
Because being a diesel tractor with a diesel engine and a great big transmission and all the hydraulics, the hydraulic fluid, and just the enormous size of the tractor of steel, that wasn't enough weight. And so they added more weight by putting calcium in the tires. And then your webpage went into a lot of detail about use lead-acid batteries to power your electric tractor, and that gives it the weight. And then the other thing is that, you know, you charge it up, and you can run it pretty much all day long once the battery's there, and then you plug it in at night.
Let me back up a little bit and talk about the energy that goes into agriculture and getting food on our tables. A lot of people would be surprised to know that there's more fossil energy going into food production than there is into transportation. That was, when I found that out, I knew I was on the right track with the electric tractor, because, you know, fossil energy is a finite resource. And as we start getting closer to the midpoint, what they call the peak point of using that finite resource, the price starts to be pretty volatile. So that's the reason I started doing electric tractors, was because in 1970 I did a lot of research for the first Earth Day that I organized on my campus at ASU, where I was studying architecture, and I found that these fossil fuels were actually finite resources.
Wait. So you organized one of the first Earth Day events?
It was the first National Earth Day, and I helped organize it on our campus at Arizona State University. Yeah.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I helped. I knew the guy that organized the whole thing, but I had a very small part in it. But mainly I mentioned that was to sort of set the stage of the length of time that I've been thinking about this, and also the fact that the main driver is that our food system and our transportation system are totally dependent on a resource that isn't going to last very much longer. And it just seems totally absurd to continue that kind of path down off this cliff that we're approaching. So I want to address a couple of the things you were talking about with your golf cart.
Okay.
One is, you know, if you have a transmission, you can have all the speeds you need. With a tractor, most tractors have 8 speeds at least. Some of them have 12 or more. But they have four speeds in the transmission, and then they have an upper and lower, high and low gear besides that. So you get two speeds in each speed of the transmission. So with that many gears, you can go 15 miles an hour, or you can go 1 mile an hour. So what a tractor transmission does for you is it allows you to go fast when you want to, but it also controls your speed when you're doing very delicate cultivation in a field where you have to go less than a mile per hour, which will incidentally burn up the clutch in most gas vehicles trying to go that slow.
I think another thing is that a lot of the things you're doing with the tractor, the speed of that the engine is turning is a direct connection to the PTO. And then for a lot of things to operate correctly that's connected to the PTO, then you have to set your engine speed to be just a certain fixed speed. And then your transmission determines, like, are you going to go 1 mile per hour or 2 miles per hour? Because you don't get to go 0.5 miles per hour, and you don't get to go 1.5 miles per hour when the engine's turning at this exact speed.
Exactly.
And a lot of diesel engines are also designed where it's like, don't be running the diesel engine slower than this or faster than this. Diesel engines are designed to run at this speed, not unlike a gasoline engine where you can kind of go vroom, vroom. That's like not the way the tractor diesel is supposed to be done.
Yeah, everybody's probably familiar with the tachometer on your tachometer gauge on your car. And, you know, it's got a red line on it. And you know what it feels like when you're lugging a car and it dies on you when you've got it in a high gear and you're trying to start out in a high gear. you ever put your car in fourth gear and tried to start, you know what lugging is. The car will just sort of jerk and die because you're going too slow. And every type of engine or motor has an efficient RPM window. With a diesel engine, it's like 1,400 to 2,000. With a gas engine, it might be 2,000 to 4,000. With an electric motor, with a DC electric motor, it's about 2,000 RPM, all the way from 1,500 to 2,500 RPM. With an AC motor, an asynchronous motor, it's like 2,500 to or 2,000 to 4,000 or 5,000. It has a very big window for an AC motor. I've used DC motors for the most part for the tractors because they're cheaper and they have maximum torque at zero RPM, which is ideally suited for a tractor. You know, most gas or diesel engines don't have much torque at zero RPM. And if you try and...
That's the stall thing you were talking about before.
Yeah, exactly. You'll kill the engine if you try and need maximum torque when you're starting out. So that's why you have to have all these gears with any internal combustion engine, because you have to start out in a very low gear or not start out under load. Like if you start out, if you start a bulldozer when you're trying to push something, it won't start. But if you start it when it's freewheeling and you're not doing any work with it, then it's pretty easy to start. With an electric motor, you can start it any old which way, and it'll start pushing immediately. So it's much better suited to a tractor than any internal combustion engine. One of the other things you raised was traction, and that, you know, you don't have very much traction in a golf cart because the wheels are such small diameter that they don't have a very big footprint at any time on the ground.
Monster golf cart. Monster.
Monster, yeah, but still, they probably were, maybe a maximum 15-inch diameter wheels.
Probably a little bit bigger than that, but yeah, you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, a tractor has, you know, the traction wheels on a tractor are more like 40 inches in diameter. So it has a much bigger footprint that's hitting the ground at any one time. The ultimate traction is with tracks, where there's maybe an 8-inch wide rubber track or 10 or 12-inch wide rubber track, but it's like 4 or 5 feet on the ground at any one time. So there's a whole lot of traction with that. But the other thing about traction is the weight pushing down on the ground that will make the tire sink in a little bit more, so it'll even have more traction. It'll have more friction on the ground, in other words. So when I started doing tractors, I went and did some research and went to a couple of the tractor distributors, and I saw these weights that you could put on the front or the back of the tractor to give you more traction, depending on if you had an implement on the front or a loader, or an implement on the back or a loader on the front. You'd put these weights on the back if you had a loader on the front. You'd put them on the front bumper if you had an implement in the back, so that you wouldn't either tip the thing over and it would still give you a lot of traction. Well, those weights cost about $80 a piece, and they weighed about 80 pounds a piece. And I went to buy the lead-acid batteries, and they weigh about 80 pounds a piece, and they cost about $80 a piece. So for the same price as you buy these steel or iron weights that didn't do you anything but weigh a lot, and they were heavy to put on, I could buy a battery. And a battery will do a lot of good if you've got an electric tractor. it's what you need to power the thing. So I was able to put a battery on the front if I needed weight in the front that was about equal to the weights that I'd buy for the same cost as just buying the weights. Right away when I was building tractors, I found that it was important to put the weight on the traction wheels. When I first started, I did conversions of tractors, and the only place to put the batteries was where the engine used to be in the front, and that put the weight over the steering wheels, which didn't do you much good for traction and made it hard to steer. So I got the idea that the batteries needed to go right between the traction wheels. And I really haven't done, other than the track layers, I haven't done four-wheel drive tractors because of the expense of either doing four-wheel motors or the loss of efficiency of having that shaft going forward and all the drivetrain losses of efficiency with four-wheel drives. You know, four-wheel drive vehicles are a lot less efficient unless you need the traction. And you don't always need the traction if you've got the weight in the right place. You can get the traction off the rear wheels. So it worked out really well when I was able to put the batteries right between the wheels. And then I was able to do a lot of other things with wheel motors in one tractor where I could have the wheel motors right at the wheel and not have a transmission, because the electric motor had a bigger operating RPM window than so I didn't need all those gears. I could gear it to do what a tractor needs to do and not be a road vehicle. It would just do what a tractor needed to do and not think that it had to do everything. But that tractor had a movable seat also, so you could have the seat facing forward and operate the tractor like a normal tractor with the implement in the back and on a PTO. And I could put it, you were talking about the speed of the PTO being a primary concern when you've got the RPM for the RPM of the engine. And what I've been able to do on a few tractors is put a separate motor on the PTO and have it adjusted so it was always going the optimum RPM. Have a sensor on it that when it slowed down in heavy soil or something running a rototiller, it would speed up the motor and suck a little more juice to speed it up. And then when it didn't need that much juice, when it was lighter soil or you were mowing or something lighter energy draw, it wouldn't give it as much juice. It would just give it just as much as it needed to maintain that RPM, which is 540 revolutions per minute on most tractors. That's what the PTO is rated at. So I could maintain that constant speed with a separate motor.
Now, what do you call that tractor? That one's a little bit different from some of your other ones. What do you call that tractor?
I called that one the Scratch Built. Or number 7. That was the 7th tractor I built.
All right. And that's the one with it's the low rider. It's the one that's the size of a normal tractor, but it's like the whole nose part where the engine goes is just simply not there.
It's just open, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another novel idea. There was a few tractors that have been built where you could look forward at what you were doing, which is just kind of a novel concept. You know, most tractors, you have to look back while you're driving forward to see what the implement's doing, especially for cultivation, so you don't take out the plants you're trying to cultivate around. You've got to be looking backwards while you're driving forward, and you can get quite a kink in your neck doing that. Well, there was a few tractors. The Alice Chalmers G was the main example. It was built from 1940 to 1959. That a lot of people think was the best small farm tractor ever built. And I've been able to, with an electric motor, because it's not as big, you don't need to take up the whole front end. I'm replacing a diesel engine that's probably 3 feet long and 2 feet high and a foot and a half wide with an electric motor that has the same power. It's 7 inches in diameter and 12 inches long. So when you've got something that small, it's easy to find a place for it that doesn't take up the whole front end, so you can't see what you're doing up there. So I've been able to make tractors where I could put a cultivating bar in the front, and you could actually see what the cultivating bar was doing when you were looking forward, driving forward, and not have to look backward the whole time. So that was pretty neat to realize that it had a lot of other benefits, as well as the weight of the batteries and the smallness of the engine. You could do things that made farming a whole lot easier to do with a tractor.
Right. So if I remember correctly, now I'm looking at some pictures that you sent to me for this podcast, for the purpose of doing this podcast. So I see four pictures of the number seven. Two of them have a solar roof on them, so it kind of acts as a shade to the driver, and then it's constantly collecting solar energy as you drive and as it's parked. But I think that the most important thing I need to point out is that in all four pictures, the driver is wearing overalls.
Yeah, that's probably the most important thing on there. It's really the most important thing is
appropriate farm attire. That's right.
Yeah, my daughter, I don't know if the people are going to be able to see these who are listening to the podcast.
I'll make sure that they get up on the site. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my oldest daughter is the one on the upper right-hand corner. That's not me. The rest of them are me. She has blue overalls on, and I have Carhartt brown.
Yeah. Looking good. Looking good. And then the next thing is that there are four positions for the operator on the number seven tractor. And so one position is the traditional position where you're sitting with your butt kind of over the rear axle and you're facing towards the steering part of the tractor. That's position number one. Position number two is in roughly the same place, but you're facing the opposite direction. So you're facing over the three-point hitch.
Right.
And then the controls are all right there. You still have the same controls to do everything you need to do. The third position is like starting off with position number one, but you're moved forward about 2 feet and down about 2 feet. So your butt is almost dragging on the ground. You're kind of like in the belly of the tractor, sort of. And this is where you could be putt-putting along, monkeying with stuff on a row or on a raised bed, fiddling with things with your hands on the ground. Your hands could actually touch the soil, and you could do transplanting or seeding or whatever it is that you might want to do, and you've got your little portable chair that rolls along.
That's exactly right. Now, let me tell you what makes that possible. You know, you said steering. Well, this doesn't have a steering wheel, obviously. It has a joystick, and the younger generation is real familiar with joysticks. You can have a friction-operated joystick so that you can adjust your speed forward when you're going straight and just leave it there. And this thing can go so you can go so slow that you can hardly see the wheel moving. That's how slow it can go. And so you can imagine setting up a gang of like three people in these planting seats that would fit over that center portion of the tractor. So one would be sitting on one side and one in the middle and one would be sitting on the other side. And the guy in the middle would just set the tractor on forward at, say, 1/10 of a mile per hour or something like that. and they could all have their flats of strawberry plants, or they could all have their belts headed to the back of this thing where there'd be a bin where they'd harvest something and it would go up. And this thing by itself, under the power of the solar shade canopy, because to go 1/10 of a mile an hour does not take hardly any energy at all. It can actually operate off the sun that strikes the shade canopy going that slow. So this thing could creep across the field, and these people could be picking or planting using only solar energy. And the other thing about an electric tractor or any electric vehicle is you're only using energy when you're doing work. Now, you think about a gas or a diesel tractor, even worse. A lot of guys will turn their tractor on in the morning, and they will leave it running all day long. Same thing with big diesel trucks. They'll turn them on first thing in the morning, and they'll do a, you know, they'll go into a truck stop, and you'll hear all these diesel trucks with their engines rolling because they don't like to turn them off. But those things, when I used to drive diesel tractors, the noise would just make me, so nervous. I would feel like I should be doing work or something when I had to be doing some other operations. I'd get almost panicky because this thing, this big engine was running all the time. And, I felt like I was wasting all this energy. With an electric, you stop. You can stop anytime you want. You're not using any energy. You can get off the tractor and it's not running. You know, it's stopped. And the noise is stopped. And when you're using an electric tractor, you can hear the birds sing because it's very quiet, especially when you're going really slow. You know, when the motor goes faster and faster, you can hear a little bit of a whine, but it's way in the background. You can carry on a conversation. You could be planting and harvesting on this thing and be carrying on a conversation with the people next to you. You can't do that with a diesel tractor. And a diesel tractor has a whole lot of problems going that slow. They'd burn up clutches trying to keep it going that slow, and they don't have gearing low enough to go 1/10 of a mile an hour. So they have to do special things to go that slow. They usually have to run hydraulic pumps with diesel engines and then use hydraulic motors. So you got a whole lot of inefficiency with a hydraulic pump and a diesel engine and a hydraulic motor, where they're finding now even John Deere is making tractors that have a big diesel generator, and the whole tractor is powered by electric motors.
Oh, I thought that they were moving towards hydraulic, but now you're saying that they're moving towards electric.
They're moving toward electric, yeah, because it's more efficient. It's all about efficiency now as diesel prices go up. You know, when a diesel is $2 a gallon, nobody cares about efficiency because it's like they can throw the fuel away and leave the thing running, and it just doesn't hurt that bad when you go to fill it up. But when diesel gets up to $5 a gallon, like it did in 2008, and it's about to do now, last time I looked, it was $4.80 a gallon for diesel at the local place here. So it's almost up to $5 a gallon, and then people start getting interested in electric tractors again because it starts hurting. It starts hurting to fill up that tank so often.
So I know that when I had my electric golf cart, that it's true. You go at full speed ahead, and it's like you hear all the birds, you hear all the animals, you hear all the sounds that are there to be heard. But when the tractors, and then you can have a whisper conversation with somebody as you're going around, and you have the whisper conversation so you can continue to hear all the wonderfulness of being on the farm. And then when the tractor was running, you had to shout to be heard. And so everybody around the tractor is shouting in order to be heard over the tractor, which is idling.
Right.
And then plus it was smelly. It just really stunk, and it stunk when it was running, and it stunk when you had to fill it up with fuel.
Well, not only that, it's hazardous. You know, they've outlawed hydraulics in a lot of fields because, like in lettuce fields, because hydraulics are always leaking. And it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to leak. You know, from the hose.
I switched all my hydraulic oil over to vegetable oil. There's like, I think it's canola oil. I can't remember which oil it was. There's one kind of oil which is basically an edible oil that you can use for hydraulic oil. And mine was all edible oil.
Well, a few people can do that, but, you know, it's like people using vegetable oils from these greasy spoons, you know. A few people can run their cars on those things, but if everybody started doing it, I think it takes about one greasy spoon per car to fuel it. So either we'd have to have a lot more greasy spoons, or we're going to have to figure out a different fuel eventually. But the sun...
Right. That's a very good point.
Yeah, the sun doesn't run out, you know. It's burned for at least 4.5 billion years, and they say it's going to burn for another 5.5 billion years. So it's not something we really have to worry about.
Well, I think another thing is I had all the hydraulic stuff throughout mine for the sake of the hydraulic takeoff in the back to hook up to whatever implement I might connect to that required hydraulics. And then also for the loader that was on the front had a ton of different hydraulics on that, and so that was pretty much, you know, the only reason why I had any hydraulic gobbledygook going on at all. And in fact, the hydraulics out of the back, it seems like I there was only like one thing I ever hooked up to it that used that, and I can't even remember what that was. Most stuff used the PTO. But going back to what you're talking about miles per hour, I do know that there was at least one implement. I think there's two different implements where it's like, I just can't get the tractor to go slow enough to match. Because like I think the rotavator, I had a rotavator on the back, and I was digging up this gravel, and I was also using it to make a pond to help, you know, break up the soil for recompacting it for a pond, The speed of the tractor at the lowest possible speed for the transmission was going like about three times too fast for the rotavator.
Yeah.
And the rotavator couldn't keep up.
Yeah, well,
and
that's important in those when you're using an implement, you know, to go the right speed for the implement. Otherwise, you're bogging down the implement or you're bogging down the tractor, one of the two. So...
Need to go slow was there.
Yeah.
Now, as far as like, okay, the number seven, and there's four different places for the driver to sit, and we've talked about three so far. There's standard tractor position. Then there's the reverse, where you're facing towards what would traditionally be the back. And then there's the belly seat, where you're sitting where your butt's almost touching the ground, and you can actually fondle the soil as you go by at 0.1 miles per hour. And then the fourth and last option for the driver to sit was like...
Anywhere.
Amazing to me. Not only anywhere, but you could even drive the tractor... like 20 feet away, 100 feet away. It's a remote control tractor.
Well, everybody knows about remote control cars. You know, they're all electric, these little cars that buzz all around. They're getting pretty sophisticated, and the remote control airplanes. And the remote controls themselves are getting really inexpensive. When I was building these back in 1996 and 97, the remote controls were a lot more expensive. I built number eight for a Japanese company that was building minesweep units. Well, it was a humanitarian effort that they were doing. in places where the landmines were put down, personnel mines, and they were put down in farmland, and they could no longer farm because they were, you know, blowing their legs and arms off every time they went out in the fields. Because there's places like Bosnia and all over Africa and all over Asia where there's a lot of areas where people can no longer go because they were mined. And, you know, the U.S. was one of the only countries that didn't sign the anti-personnel mine ban. And so we were still putting them in all the wars that we've been participating in. And so they're all over the world. But anyway, this Japanese company was building these gas-powered mine sweep units. And what they were like tractors. And they had this huge cage on the front that would, or the back, they built both kinds, that would, they tried to get it as far away from the tractor as possible, but they could only have it as far away as it would, so it wouldn't tip over the tractor. You know, if they had it too far away, then it would just go down in the dirt. So they had to have the right weight in the tractor to hold it up and keep it far away so that when these revolving chains would be beating the ground and they'd explode the landmines. And usually if they were a fairly big landmine, they would destroy the tractor and injure whoever was driving the tractor. So they were looking for something that, and these minesweep units were costing them $100,000 a piece, and they were good for average blowing up two or three landmines, and then they were disabled, and they were, you know, left in the field, so they were these heavy things out in the field that became an obstruction after they cleared the field. There was this thing sitting out there that they had to get rid of, and a lot of times they just sat there and rusted. So another obstacle for the farmer, like pulling out big boulders, there was another thing sitting in the field. So the idea was that I would be able to do this with electric. And first of all, I built a battery box that was out of half-inch steel. So I got both the weight and the ability to survive a landmine hit out of this half-inch steel box that also contained the PTO motor. And then I had wheel motors with 50-to-1 reduction planetary gears that were built for really heavy equipment that could survive a landmine hit. And so that was one thing. But then to protect the person driving the tractor, I made remote control seats. And you could, you know, just take the seat off. These three positions that we've talked about so far, there's a wiring harness with one big cable going back to the middle of the tractor. So, you know, it was about 6 foot long cable. So you could pull the seat off and turn it around backwards or put it down between the wheels in the middle and do planting and harvesting operations. But this was actually one that didn't have any wires coming off it. It just had a remote control unit on the joystick and another remote control unit at the motors. So you could power it from anywhere, basically anywhere the new remote control units can power up to, like a half mile away, at least 400 yards or so. So you could run this thing around in the field, and then you could also put a TV camera on it and have a, you know, a TV camera on the tractor and a little monitor, you know, in front of you on the seat, so you could sit in your office somewhere and drive a tractor, really anywhere in the world.
So I'm not sure how, but somehow I think that the idea of the camera and the remote control that somehow Hollywood would want to make a movie where somehow the thing at the climax of the movie features your tractor, because somehow it just seems like this could be the big part of some plot. Like the bad guys come and they don't know about the tractor, and somehow that ends up being a big part of how the good guys save the day. It's like they're really screwed, but hey, remember that remote control tractor?
Well, I'd hate to think of the military uses, but I don't want to think of them. But you know, the peacetime uses are pretty amazing. What you can do with this to clear fields, farmers' fields that have been, you know, had all these landmines, these personnel landmines put in them. And then the tractor, what the great part about this is, the tractor could stay on after the landmines were cleared, and the farmers could use the tractor to farm.
Oh, right, right.
So it wasn't only it was designed to do this, just put this big drum that cleared the land of landmines on the back, on the PTO shaft, on a regular three-point hitch, and then you could just take that implement off. That was just an implement. You could take that implement off and put any other implement, any category implement you wanted on there. And, you know, mow or rototill or whatever you needed to do, plant and harvest. And, there's a lot of people now, a lot of farmers, using steer-by-wire and GPS. And this tractor was already set up for that. You know, they have these big tractors, these huge tractors, you know, that do a 40-foot swath or more. And they have to do it exactly right to be the most efficient. So they have them run by GPS, where they do run in exactly the same swath when they're seeding and when they're cultivating and when they're harvesting. And that's all done by GPS, where the GPS signal puts them in exactly the right place and actually steers the tractor through the field.
Wow. Now, having driven a lot of tractors when I was younger and a lot of harvesting equipment like swathers or combines or the equivalent, I could totally see how the whole process could indeed be made more efficient through GPS and that kind of thing. But leaving all that aside for a moment, I kind of want to throw some emphasis on a couple of different things. I mean, you know, modern tractors, very new tractors, have, when compared to this tractor, just the number 7, and we'll talk about your more recent inventions later, but when just comparing to the number 7 here, the number 7 has all sorts of advantages. And one, like you mentioned, the PTO, the PTO can go, and you can adjust your speed while the PTO is going, whereas your current tractors, it's like you need to stop. Your PTO is still going. You take your PTO on and off, but then you pretty much set your throttle to be at the certain speed, which is just right for the PTO. And then you can, like, pick the next gear to determine how fast you're going to go, even with the PTO going. And it's kind of hard. I mean, you're using the clutch a lot to just go into that gear or out of that gear, because it's not like you drive a tractor. It's not like a car where you go first gear, second gear, third gear. It's like, you always use, you know, for this job, you found out that third gear is the gear to use. So you just leave it in third gear all the time, and then you just use the clutch to go in and out of third gear, like you're bailing. You're bailing, and you found out that you bail at this speed, which at bailing, it's like always first gear.
Lowest you can go, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times first gear. So then you find yourself like doing this thing where it's like, okay, I'm in first gear, but now I'm going too fast. The baler's not dealing with it, so I'm going to put in the clutch, and I'm going to stop and wait for the baler to catch up. I'm holding the clutch in, and now I'm ready to go again. So now I'm going to get going again. So it's like right there, just in that one scenario, the tractor that you hand-built, the scratch-built, number 7, is superior, already superior. just with that. But now, let's, I mean, like, I just want to gloss over, I mean, I'm sure that I'm going to leave things out, but to me, it's like the list of features. And you have a web page that's about your electric tractors. I bet you I've looked at that web page probably at least 100 times. Just read the whole thing top to bottom. I know that there are plenty of nights where it's like, okay, I got to go to bed, but I'm not quite ready to go to bed, and I'm going to do one other thing. You know what? I'm going to go look at that page again.
You must have half the hits on that page.
Maybe so. Maybe I've got it bookmarked still, and I also know you haven't changed that page, like, ever.
No, I started that website in 95, and I haven't done much to it. So. But it's still pretty current. Most of the solar stuff is still pretty current, and the tractors, I'm just starting up again, so a lot of it I did back then.
I know I emailed you about 4 years ago about electric tractors, and then you wrote back and said that you'd moved on to a track style thing, but you know what? I'm not going to talk about that yet. I want to stick to the number seven for a moment because there's some important stuff to talk about here. One thing is that I'm going to guess that if you had to talk about, well, first of all, oh, geez, there's just too many things. The tractor that I had was a 45-horsepower tractor. And 45 horsepower is like this magic number for a tractor because it's like there's a whole bunch of implements that you can either pull or connect to the three-point hitch or whatever that require a minimum of 45 horsepower or 40 horsepower, and you get 45 just to be safe. And haying is one where it's like all the equipment designed for haying, or I'm not going to say all, I'm going to say most of the equipment for small farm haying is designed for 40, 45 horsepower. Now, granted, there are some newer exceptions that are going to work for much smaller, but it seems like the standard is about 40, 45 horsepower for small haying operations. And it seemed to me that your number seven here was it could handle that. Like it could do all the stuff with the 45 horsepower implements. On the other hand, I believe that I read that it's like it's only 10 or 15 horsepower, but it'll do all the 45 horsepower jobs, and it has to do with the difference between the way stuff is that I don't understand, but there's that's just if you can just tell me that's true, I want to move on to a couple of other things. We can come back to that if that's all right.
Well, it's not exactly true. This one, this number seven was, you know, just cobbled together off of stuff I could find. The potential is there for that definitely to satisfy all those things you were talking about, and the main reason that the potential is there is because, well, let me talk about a few things. One is that when you talk about 45 PTO horsepower, you're talking about a motor that's probably 50 horsepower because you only get 80% of that to the PTO, 75 to 80% of that to the PTO, because all the drivetrain stuff that you have to go through to get back to the PTO and still run power the wheels at the same time. So if you have a dedicated motor, which I did on number seven, I had a dedicated motor that I could make any size that it needed to be. And what John Deere's doing now with their big tractors that they're having a diesel generator on, and then they're powering all the implements with electric motors that are ideally sized to that particular implement rather than making one big engine for the largest power requirement there is and then using it inefficiently on everything else. You actually could have the most efficient motor for each application. And say you've got three implements, one's a mower, which now run, you know, they have a PTO that's 75% efficient, and then they've got gearing in there, and then maybe it goes to belts that are another, you know, 75% efficient, and overall maybe the whole mower is like 50% efficient at using the energy that the motor is producing. Whereas if you have a little tiny electric motor on each rotor, and that's what they do with the new stuff and with past electric mowers. You have just a little tiny motor that's a fraction, like maybe it's probably a half horse would run a most mower blades. So you're talking about going from 50 horsepower to half horse, and maybe you've got three of these half horse motors, and you're doing a 6 foot wide swath or more.
So I think what you're suggesting is that rather than using the traditional bush hog approach, where you have a big PTO kind of thing, that instead you would have something where you'd run a big electrical wire off the tractor out to these motors on the mower.
Exactly.
And drive it directly.
So you're just plugging an Anderson conductor plug into the tractor, and you've got two cables, a positive and negative cable, going to another Anderson plug that you plug into the motor. And that, rather than hooking up a PTO, you're just plugging in a plug. So, and the efficiencies are just incredible. And, there's one thing that we sort of glossed over. You're talking about all the hydraulics that you had on your tractor, to run the hydraulic cylinders for the lift in the back, the three-point hitch. On this tractor, I have a three-point hitch facing the front and a three-point hitch facing the back. And there are implements that are mid-mount, and there are implements that are front-mount, and there are implements that are rear-mount. And this was a mid three-point hitch that I could also hook the seat on, and that's how I could make the seat go up and down. It was hooked to the three-point hitch in the front, and so you could get as low to the ground as you needed to for planting and harvesting, and you could raise and lower it while you were sitting. It just has little... And I did this with something called linear actuators. When I first started doing this, the only linear actuators that were available were designed for TV satellite dishes. They were the first linear actuators ran these big dishes to keep them aligned. So that, they'd always be facing, you could adjust them to face the satellite that you wanted them to face from in the house. You'd have a little remote control that would, or a wired control that would go out to the satellite dish, and you could adjust it until the signal came in just perfect. Uh-huh. Well, those were done with linear actuators, and they're just little tiny motors hooked to screw jacks, just like the jacks for that you lift houses with. They're just Acme threaded jacks.
Oh, right. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can lift like 20 tons by hand by turning this thing. And that's why you could have a little tiny motor doing this and still lift, move 1,000 pounds with a motor that's like 1/20th horsepower. And so you're pumping like just minute amount of electricity, like at 48 volts, these are 6 amps. So to keep that in perspective, when the rototiller's going on the tractor, it's using from 200 to 400 amps. When a hydraulic pump usually has about a 5 horsepower motor on it to operate like a loader or operate equipment, it requires at least a 5 horsepower electric motor and probably a 20 horsepower gas motor, and it takes a certain amount of horsepower from the what we're talking about, a 50 horsepower tractor here. It takes a certain amount of horsepower to run the hydraulic pump on that tractor to do all these hydraulic functions. So we're talking about from 50 horsepower to 6 amps at 48 volts, which is a huge, huge difference.
Right. And so basically, I think that the key out of all of this, this little diversion that we're having, is that, like, you could use a bush hog that's hooked to PTO. It'll use a certain amount of power. But if you had a redesigned bush hog that had the engine that had an electric motor mounted on it and then a cable running to the tractor, it would probably cost about the same for the bush hog, because then all that PTO stuff would be replaced with stuff that would probably cost the equivalent, which would be the motor and the cable. And then it would probably use half the power.
Correct.
You would save a lot of energy because it's so much more efficient at that point.
Less than half the power. Because electric motors are rated at their continuous duty. And they can put out, like when I was building the electric Porsche Spyders, I put a 20 horsepower advanced DC motor in those, and they would outperform the original 64 horsepower gas engine by a long shot. You know, I went 0 to 60 in 8 seconds in those, and they went up to 120 miles an hour. So, and that was all because for shorter periods of time, you can operate a 20 horsepower electric motor at 60 horsepower. It'll put out 60 horsepower for short periods of time. And the same thing is true with this mower. That's why you can get by with a half horsepower, because you're not using that much energy for most of the time when you're mowing grass. You're going through dry grass or something, and it's there's no effort at all. And then every once in a while you'll hit something heavy, like you'll hit a rock or you'll hit a tree root or something that'll try and slow it down, and an electric motor can take that and give you that instantaneous power that you need to get through that without having to have the huge engine behind it doing it. So instead of needing that 5 horsepower or 20 horsepower gas engine or 50 horsepower tractor to operate something that really only requires a half horsepower.
This podcast will be continued in part 2. If you like this sort of thing, come out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about electric tractors, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.